Forever Solvers, the holidays are coming, and that means gift giving. We have a bunch of fabulous new merch over at resolvedmysteriespodcast.com/merch. There are shirts and totes and mugs and other gifty goodies. We also now have a sponsor page, which has some great gift ideas like Unidragon puzzles and Audible subscriptions. And there are some other unique gift opportunities for fans of RM, like sending your honey some love on our Resolved Mysteries billboard or signing them up for our Patreon. So head over to resolvedmysteriespodcast.com and click on advertising and support for more information.
This podcast contains adult language and stories of true crime. If you don't like laughing, crying, or being horrified at the actions of other humans, this podcast is not for you.
Listeners, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 16, Part 2 of Resolved Mysteries. This is the show where we rewatch, recap, and give you the latest updates to cases featured on the best show ever, Unsolved Mysteries, and I'm Eliza.
I'm Allison.
I'm Carlin.
And like I said, this is a Part 2, so you can go back and listen to Part 1 and the first two segments that are featured on this episode. As many of you know, for every review that we receive, we donate a dollar to a different organization, and this month's is the Trevor Project, which was suggested to us by our beloved patron, Raina. So you can support the show and support the Trevor Project by leaving a review.
And speaking of patrons, I just wanted to let our honey Justin know that, you know, we do record our episodes on the same day when we have two parts. So I'm re-upping my tequila glass right now.
She's not shooting it. She is sipping it,
though. Cheers to you, I'm Justin.
I do not want to sip this.
She is doing it. Just did it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. We're in for a Carlin episode. I love it.
If you would like to support us on Patreon like Justin is doing and so many others, you'll get access to ad-free episodes, two additional episodes a month, and early access to listener short stacks, along with goodies in the mail. So you can go to patreon.com/resolvemysteriespodcast to do that. Okay, I'm off the hook for Part 2. What are both of you covering in this episode?
I have a very, very traumatic segment. It is a wanted segment, and it is the story of Angela Hammond.
Mm. Truly horrible, scariest reenactment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to be covering the missing segment about Lee Young.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's do it. All right, sisters.
No, I don't want to do it.
I'm scared.
I know, honey. I know.
Oh, my God. I hate this.
All right. So I'm sure most of our listeners, even if they're fairly new to Unsolved Mysteries, if they ever watched it when they were younger, remember this case. It's very famous. It's one of the most talked about cases on Unsolved Mysteries. This is the story of Angela Hammond. So I want to say in the most tackiest thing, when you look at the episodes on Unsolved Mysteries, on Amazon for Unsolved Mysteries, they each segment has a different title of the segment.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is titled Dial A for Abduction.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Which is good. So gross and tone deaf.
Sometimes good. They're really bad.
Yeah.
Pretty mortifying. I have to say that when I think about the last few episodes that we recorded, starting with episode 14, I think this is when I thought of the podcast, because these episodes are super vivid in my brain. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I saw this segment, I was like, oh, yeah, this is it. Like, this might have been it. Either this or the Casey Nicole. But these, I feel like we're getting into episodes that, like, are kind of like cultural touchstones for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So Clinton, Missouri, population 9,000, Stack says, is an idyllic farm community in the heart of small-town America, a type of place where everyone knows each other and feels insulated from the big city crime. But today, a cloud of uncertainty hangs over Clinton. A popular woman has been abducted and quite possibly murdered. Angela Hammond was an active and outgoing 20-year-old, known to everyone as Angie. Her family had lived in Clinton for three generations. Her fiancé, Rob Schaefer, was a high school athlete who looked forward to a career in the military. In January of 1991, Rob gave Angie a diamond ring and promised that he would always take care of her. April 4th, 1991, at around 10 p.m., Angie dropped Rob off at his house after a barbecue. She said that she was going to a friend's house, and in the reenactment, she says, "I'm going to go to Kayla's," and she promised that she would call him a few hours later. Apparently, Angie and Rob at this point actually lived together, but Rob was at his mom's house babysitting his younger brother, and she went to hang out with Kayla, but they were going to meet up after his mom got home. And she called him later to say that she was tired and she would just meet him at home. And she didn't own, they didn't have a home phone, which is why she used the payphone. So I think all of that is good exposition because a lot of people were like, what was she doing at a payphone?
That's
like,
what I was wondering. It was a weird place to be making those calls.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a little bit of background. So that kind of puts things into perspective. At 11:15 p.m., Angie called Rob from the center of town, approximately 7 blocks from his mother's house.
Oh.
I know. This is so, so traumatic.
That just gave me chills.
Rob is interviewed, and he says that while Angie was talking to him, she mentioned a green Ford pickup truck circling the block. And in the reenactment, Rob asks her if she recognized the truck, and she says no. And then Rob says, oh, it's probably just someone who is lost. Stack says that Angie remained unconcerned until the truck parked next to the phone booth. In the reenactment, Angie tells Rob that the man pulled up next to the phones. Rob asks Angie what the man looks like, and she says that he's kind of dirty looking, and he has a mustache, beard, and glasses, and he's wearing overalls.
I just thought Rob was so smart to even be asking these questions.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So then she tells Rob that he's walking up to the phones. Then she tells him that the truck... So then Rob is like, what does the truck look like? Which also, amazing. Yes.
Again, he's like, give me a description of everything that's happening.
Yeah, because he's concerned about her, you know? So then she tells Rob that the truck is a late model green pickup with a decal that covers the whole back of the window of a lake scene with a fish jumping out of the water. Like, super specific.
Mm-hmm.
Rob says that Angie told him that the man used the payphone next to her, and then he went back to his truck and started looking for something with a flashlight. So Rob tells Angie to ask the man if he needed to use the phone because maybe the other phone was broken. And the man said no, that he was going to try again in a minute. Rob tells Angie that maybe he should come down there, and Angie says no, it was okay. And then they start talking about other things for a little
while. Or just get off the phone and drive away.
I know.
But that makes so much more sense now knowing they didn't have a phone. Because I was like, what is she doing? What is she doing here?
Yeah. But, like, she was 7 blocks away, so she could have just went and talked to Rob. But in her head, she was tired and she wanted to go home, so she was just going to have one last phone call before.
Oh, God.
I can see it from all these different perspectives.
Yeah.
And so they're chatting, and they start talking about other stuff, you know, and all of a sudden, Rob hears Angie scream.
No.
So immediately it's clear that Rob is super upset while he's being interviewed, and he's trying really hard to stay composed in the interview because they stay on his face for a minute and he's clenching and unclenching his jaw like crazy. Like he's working so hard to keep this, to keep it together in this talking head.
Well, and you're gonna get to it, but he feels guilty, and it's horrible that he feels guilty. And you can tell he's like almost like embarrassed to be talking about it because he feels like he owns it. And it's like, oh, so heartbreaking.
There is like an element of humiliation in this, and it's so sad. And it really, it makes all of this so much worse.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
No. Rob hears Angie scream, and he immediately runs out of his house and jumps into his car. So he starts heading toward the town square. As he's driving, he sees a green pickup truck going past, and he hears Angie scream, Robbie!
Gosh, I hate it.
I am, like, covered in goosebumps right now.
Yeah, me too.
So Rob throws his car into reverse, like, literally just, like, doesn't even slam on the brakes, like, spins the car around, tosses it into reverse, and speeds after the truck. So he chases the truck through downtown, where, like, she was in the town square, but in this unbelievably cruel twist of fate. No. When Rob threw his car into reverse so quickly, he severely damaged the transmission.
Oh, my God.
So the pickup makes a sharp right turn, and Rob's car dies.
No.
It is horrible.
It's like, just a nightmare.
even, like, the fact that he saw her in the truck again, yeah, like, makes it worse.
There's no way that he didn't, for a very long time, and maybe to this day, not see that image in his mind.
And it constantly makes you think, what did the driver think, and what did Angie think for the reason he stopped? Because you would not think, oh, his car broke down.
Yeah.
What are the chances of that happening?
I didn't even think of that, what she thought.
I didn't think of that either. Ugh, oh, that's horrible.
So Rob says that he chased them for about 10 minutes, but the car died.
God.
Marcia Cook, Angie's mom, says that Rob blamed himself for it because he always told her that he'd take care of her. But Marcia, who is amazing, and she's so amazing, she says that he did everything that could be done. And she says that no one blames him, but he thinks that people blame him.
No. Oh, my God. It makes me so heartbroken.
Yeah. It's devastating. Rob says the beginning is the hardest because you know you were close enough to get them, but you didn't get the job done.
Gosh.
I just want to, like, hug him. He says that he still wakes up at night wondering where she's at, wondering what happened, wondering if anyone is still looking for her. You just wonder all of the time.
Jeez.
Stack says that news of Angie's disappearance sent shockwaves through Clinton. Police and citizens launched an extensive air and land search, but there was no sign of Angie Hammond, her abductor, or the pickup truck. Detective Damon Parsons from the Clinton City Police says that they have some assistance from the Missouri State Highway Patrol. They did a computer search of all registered vehicles with the make, model, and approximate year. Through their help, the Clinton police had about 1,600 possibilities, and he says that they checked them all out with no success, which is unbelievable. Stack says the police based their investigation on Rob Schaefer's testimony. But with no witnesses to corroborate his story, Rob became a suspect himself. Marcia Cook says that she thinks it's natural that people wonder, did the boyfriend do it type thing. But she's known this kid all his life and never doubted for a minute that he had anything to do with it. And I love her. You know, she's like, no, I'm not playing into this. There's no way that he did it. Stack says then, within a week, Rob Schaefer was cleared of any involvement.
Hmm.
2 days later, the police connected the abduction in Clinton to two other unsolved cases in a 100-mile radius, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I was like, who the hell is this guy? Like, who is this person driving around abducting these women? So the first occurred in Max Creek, Missouri on January 19th, 1991. 42-year-old Trudy Darby was working alone in a convenience store, which we have seen many times before at this point.
Yep.
Around 10 p.m., she called her son to report a suspicious man lurking outside. Less than 10 minutes later, Trudy's son arrived at the store and found it completely deserted. 2 days later, Trudy's body was found in a riverbank 10 miles from the store. She had been shot twice in the head. Then, on February 28, 1991, 30-year-old Cheryl Ann Kenny was reported missing in Nevada, Missouri, 70 miles from Max Creek. She vanished shortly after closing up the convenience store where she worked. That night, Cheryl's car was found in the store parking lot, and she has not been seen since. Less than 1 month later, Angie Hammond was abducted.
God, just looking for women alone at night.
Yep, just a full-on predator.
Yep.
These people are just predators, and these women are sitting ducks.
Yeah.
These women working these overnight shifts. Detective Damon Parsons says that if Angela is found, it might provide the link that the three abductions are related. Stack says that authorities fear that a serial killer may be on the loose in West Central Missouri. Even though they hold out little hope that Angela Hammond or Cheryl Ann Kenny are still alive, there have been unconfirmed sightings of Angela in the U.S. and Canada. Okay.
Yeah.
You gotta, but come on.
Right.
Marcia Cook says that if anybody out there sees anything, to please put yourself in their place and how they feel, how heart-wrenching that she was taken. She says even if the guy who did it sees this, if he would just call them and let them know what he did with her.
God.
Stack says there's one final chilling detail in the abduction of Angela Hammond. After she screamed into the phone, Rob Schaefer heard another person speak, most likely her abductor. All he said was, quote, I didn't need to use the phone anyway.
What the fuck does that mean? Monster.
Monster. So Stack gives the description that Angie gave Rob. The suspect was dirty with a beard and glasses. The man was driving a late 1960s, early 1970s two-tone green Ford pickup truck. The back window was completely covered by an opaque decal of a fish jumping out of water. And there is no update.
The worst. The worst.
So,
I don't know.
This case is still unsolved.
No.
Angela Hammond has never been found, and this continues to be a very well-known cold case and one of the biggest cold cases in the state of Missouri.
Wow.
Also, what this segment fails to tell us is that 20-year-old Angela Hammond was 4 months pregnant.
No.
No.
Yeah. So I just have some additional information and then a fairly recent update. So a commenter on unsolved.com named Becky wrote in 2017, quote, I grew up in Clinton and knew both Angela and Rob. Angela did not live in Clinton. She lived in a neighboring small town that was likely 20 to 30 minutes away. There were no cell phones then, and we used to use payphones all the time. She was being responsible by using the payphone.
Wow.
And everyone hangs out on the square just 2 blocks away. And the police station is right on the square. Mm. Rob is totally innocent. He was at school the next week and totally in a daze. It was unreal. Whoever took her is not from the area or someone would have recognized that truck. Yeah. Everybody knows everybody in this area.
That's what I thought, too. Like, this is definitely a passing through situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She says people left their doors unlocked all of the time. So people, stop blaming Rob and stop blaming Angela. They did nothing wrong.
Good job saying stop blaming Angela, too. That is...
Yeah, yeah. Because all the commenters were like, right. Well, what does she expect?
Which it's all young people who'd never had to live this way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, what does she expect? She's on a payphone at 10 p.m. Like, she's in a center square. It's well lit. The police station's right there. And she hangs out there all the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, hi. She should be able to call on a payphone from anywhere at any time and yes. not be abducted and probably murdered.
Yeah.
So two different witnesses came forward after hearing about the abduction, saying that they, too, had seen a suspicious green truck around the payphone area that night around 11:30, 11:45 p.m. Two witnesses told police that they saw a white man with a mustache wearing a dark-colored baseball-style cap sitting in the truck near the telephone booth that Hammond was using. And the witness's description is similar to the one that Hammond gave Rob moments before the line went dead. They also verified the fish decal in the back window, and it was described as a fish jumping out of water. Everything in Rob's story was corroborated by physical evidence. Police found his car broken down where he said that the transmission failed, and they also found Angela's car abandoned at the very location of the payphone. Rob arrived at the police station mere minutes after his car broke down because he was picked up by a passerby.
I was wondering what he did right afterwards.
I think someone drove by, he flagged them down, and he was at the police station 15 minutes after the abduction. This is all, like, minute by minute.
With all the descriptions, too, that she gave him, it's just crazy that he was not found. Or she was not found, but the abductor.
Ugh. And the truck. How do you get rid of a truck that quickly?
Right. Yes. With a decal. I mean, he could have taken the decal off, but still, it's
But it's a two-tone, a green two-tone 1960s, 1970s.
Yeah.
How do you dump a truck that's that, like, that's not, I don't know.
Unless he just drove really far away.
He either just drove really far away, he had the ability to dump that truck someplace very quickly. I don't know. But it's wild. We've seen that a couple times with these, like, very specific-looking vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That are never seen again.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that had, like, a great... Didn't one have Grateful Dead stuff drawn on
it? It had a mural.
Oh, a mural.
One had a mural, and then I did a short stack that a girl was abducted and the van had, like, horse decal all over
it. Just, like...
I know. And they were very popular back then, but this is a really, like, this is not a heavily populated, compared to, like, the coastal cities.
Mm. Yeah.
There's not hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people here, so.
Yeah.
So there were decades of theories. People thought it could have been a set of serial-killing brothers who were in the area at the time. Oh, people thought for many, many years, and still to this day, people blame Rob.
No.
I cannot.
I know.
Just watch his interview.
It's so upsetting.
He's fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. He's not Jewel Kaler.
No,
like, he's
no.
clearly a basket case. Uh-huh. Some theorized it was a man named Kenneth Allen McDuff, who was a serial killer that was operating from 1991 to 1992. Mm. He would abduct, rape, and strangle women. He would also brazenly abduct them in broad daylight, and at least once he murdered a pregnant woman. Mm. However, at the time, McDuff was in the Texas area when he was murdering, so I don't know if he had any connection to Missouri, but it doesn't seem like it. And for a long time, like it was mentioned in the segment, it was assumed that the same man murdered Trudy, Cheryl, and Angie, but then some new information came to light. So in 1994, half-brothers Jesse Rush and Marvin Chaney were arrested for the abduction, rape, and murder of Trudy Darby. It's D'ARB, so I don't know if it's D-R-B or Darby.
No, I've always heard it pronounced Darby.
Okay. The night of her murder, the brothers had been stopped for speeding near the convenience store where Trudy worked. After the crimes, Rush had told friends what he and his brother had done. And in September of 1994, a friend contacted the police to report it. She said that she had been afraid to tell the police before because Rush had threatened to kill her if she did.
God.
Police set up recording devices in her apartment and got her to talk to Rush about the crimes again, and Rush confessed on tape. After being arrested, Rush confessed to the police and other inmates about the murders that he and his brother had committed. He claimed that he and his brother Chaney had gone to the store to rob it and abduct Trudy and rape her. At gunpoint, they forced her into the trunk of the car and then took her to a nearby barn. They then raped her and shot her in the head. They put her back in the trunk and drove to the river where they planned to dump her body. But when they arrived, they discovered that she was still alive.
No.
So they pulled her out onto the ground and shot her again in the head.
Shut up.
Yes. Chaney denied the claims, and his wife verified his alibi, saying he was home with her. But, of course, the police knew that she was lying. There's a special place in hell for women like that.
Seriously.
In 1996, Rush was convicted of the attack and murder of Trudy Darby and received life in prison without the possibility of parole. Police still believe that Chaney was not only part of the Darby attack, but was connected to other murders across the state and talked to his wife again. Finally, she told the truth, that he was not at home that night, but out with his brother.
Ew.
Faced with new details, Chaney pleaded guilty to kidnapping and first-degree murder of Trudy Darby, and he was sentenced to life in prison. At some point, Rush wrote a letter to another prisoner telling him that there were two more bodies, but that he didn't know who they were and where they were buried. It was assumed by many that Angie and Cheryl were the women that he was referring to. Then, in mid-April of 2021, Clinton, Missouri police released a bombshell. They stated that they believed that Angela Hammond's abduction was a case of mistaken identity.
What?
Clinton Police Captain Paul Abbott, who has worked on the Hammond case since 2006, told the press that the abduction would have been difficult for a single person to pull off. He believes that she was mistaken for another person also named Angela.
What?
Quote, this Angie's father had been involved in a case where he was a confidential informant. This was a pretty significant narcotics case that probably disrupted some pretty significant drug business. The informant's wife and daughter, who was also named Angela, were living in Clinton at the time. Police think that his daughter may have been the intended target, given that they had the same name and are said to have looked, quote, strikingly similar. Captain Abbott says that this is a theory that has evolved over time. Quote, revisiting the case file again for the third or fourth time, we ran across this lead from very early on in the investigation. Abbott is referring to a letter written using letters cut out of magazine print that was postmarked April 4th, 1991, the day Hammond went missing. So the ransom note says, quote, hello, no, redacted, so there's a name here. We know you are, no, redacted. People like you deserve what they get. We know where your foxy daughter is. Oh. She will see us soon. Tell redacted. She has our deepest sympathy in our further loss. Goodbye, redacted. Captain Paul Abbott called the alleged case of mistaken identity, quote, pretty incredible. When asked if the two women looked alike, he told the outlet, quote, there were striking similarities, very much so. Investigators have come across information that was not provided by police that lends credibility to the mistaken identity theory and have so far been able to, quote, been able to refute it. A few months ago, an anonymous caller left a voicemail at the precinct with details involving that letter. Quote, I would really, really be interested in having a conversation with that person. It can be completely anonymous. It can be a telephone conversation. I can protect their identity, and I can guarantee that, said Captain Abbott. He says that he's hoping that by talking to this person, he can break down a wall and possibly break this case wide open. If we refute this information, that's great. If it leads us in the right direction, that's even better, he said. Abbott says that this is just one of the many legs of his investigation. He says he will exhaust all possibilities in his search for Hammond. Quote, this has never been a cold case as far as I'm concerned, and it's not going to be, he explained. So we're going to set a Googs alert for that because that was just in April. So the bodies of Angie Hammond and Cheryl Kenny have never been found. I do believe it's possible that Cheryl Kenny and Trudy Darby were murdered by Rush and Cheney because both were working late at night and alone at convenience stores. Mm-hmm. So they do have that in common.
Yeah.
Angie could have been unrelated. And from what the police officers are speculating, maybe just a cruel case of mistaken identity.
Yeah.
So I followed up on Rob Schaefer. He's on Facebook, but he's fairly locked down, which I can completely imagine. I was able to find a public photo of him, though, on his wife's page because she has like 4,000 friends, so she is not locked down. So I'll post it. And I honestly can't imagine what a nightmare that experience was for him. And he seems to have had some struggles over the years. And I really hope that he just found happiness and grace and was able to find some way to deal with that experience.
Seriously.
So much trauma. So
awful.
Just the trauma of that and being so young. And he was going to marry her. She was pregnant with his child. Like, it's a nightmare. And then, strangely, through Rob's wife, I found a Facebook page called Angela Marie Hammond. And there were some links to the latest developments from the April 2021 press conference that I watched and an image of the ransom note, which I have, which we'll post.
Hmm.
But I realized that Marcia Cook was the creator and moderator of the page. And since she was so active on social media, I decided to message her. You can tell what when a parent of a missing child is willing to engage, like Michaela Joyker, ex-mother, you know, just very active and always willing to, like, keep talking about the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to message her and get her thoughts on this, like, new-to-us theory and see if she could provide any insight. And I never heard back, which happens to me all the fucking time. So I didn't take it personally. But then I found her personal Facebook page because I wanted to get a recent photo because I love to do that. I want to always see, like, what the people look like now. And so I went to her Facebook page and I scrolled on her feed. And the most recent photo posted on her feed was of a grave. So initially I thought it was Angie's. But when I read the marker,
it's hers.
I saw it was Marcia's.
Oh.
She died in May, a little over a month after the press conference.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
She was deeply loved by her community in like a really beautiful way. And her brother, Ron, wrote really wonderful things about her. But he closed with, the whole world is a sadder place without people like her in it. And I just hope now that she knows what happened to Angie and that she can find peace.
Oh, my God. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So that is the gut-wrenching story of Angela Hammond.
It's just the worst. It's horrible.
Yeah. And then, there's this crazy mistaken identity theory, which...
Yeah, I don't know.
Which, like, maybe that's what happened, but still, where is she? Where is she? Where is the truck?
That mistaken identity theory is very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
Because it really, what were they going to do? They didn't hold her, I don't know. This just seems like a case of someone the crime was definitely sexually motivated to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems random to me. It seems like a crime of opportunity.
So I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, obviously law enforcement knows something that we don't know. They have way more information than we have. I just really wish that Marcia could have lived long enough to... see some justice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this story is just a heartbreaker all around. It's
terrible.
It's so, so sad. Because it literally could have gone another way
if there were like a couple more minutes.
If his car didn't break
car
down.
Car break hadn't down. Broken down.
I know.
This terrible confluence of events.
It's awful. Yeah. Oh. The universe is chaos.
It's horrible. Oh, well, good job. That's well, good so job. Sad. That's
thanks. Just horrible. Okay. This is a missing segment about Lee Young. May 5th, 1990 at 7 a.m. in the middle of the Arizona desert, 100 miles southeast of Phoenix, a crime is committed far from the eyes of potential witnesses. In the reenactment, a man in a full Canadian tuxedo is pouring a can of gasoline all over the inside of a car. And then he lights it on fire, watches as it goes up in flames, and then runs to another car and drives away. Less than half an hour later, a deputy sheriff discovers the burning car, and authorities believe the arsonist was covering up a bigger crime, murder. Detective Scott Reed of the Scottsdale PD says the car was burned to the ground, and if there had been any evidence in the car, such as blood, they weren't able to tell because everything was so burned. The car belonged to 56-year-old bank fraud investigator Lee Young from Scottsdale, but Lee was nowhere to be found. Connie Young, Lee's wife, says when she found out the car was there but Lee wasn't found, her wildest fears became a reality. Police feared that Lee had been murdered, and the most obvious motive was robbery. Stack tells us that Lee always wore a distinctive $25,000 Rolex watch.
Oh, damn. Mm-hmm.
He would also carry large amounts of cash on him so that he could buy jewelry, which he sold in his spare time. So when police searched the burned car, they were surprised to find thousands of dollars of jewelry still in the trunk. Stack says the family began to think it was something far more sinister than a robbery. Connie says the only thing she knows was missing from the trunk was Lee's briefcase, which had all his files in it. She says this leads her to believe it wasn't a robbery, it was job-related, and it was case-related. Stack tells us that several months before Lee disappeared, he'd been in contact with federal agents who dealt with drug smuggling. Young had told them that he suspected that his bank was being used as a money laundering ring. The week before he disappeared, he'd tried to reach the agents multiple times, but was not able to get in contact with them. So we have an interview with a private eye named Bob Arthur, and he says, quote, he was involved in one particular case investigating a major drug cartel in Colombia. And he had been involved in this investigation within 6 months prior to his disappearance, and the case was still ongoing, as a matter of fact, at the time of his disappearance. So, May 4th, 1990, Lee left a restaurant in Scottsdale around 12:30 p.m., and this was the last time he was ever seen. The same afternoon, a single call came in on Lee's car phone, and three calls went out. One call to the phone booth and two others to a woman who denied ever having talked to Lee Young on the phone.
Weird.
What?
I know. They, yeah.
They're like, we have the receipts. What are you saying? What do you mean?
Yeah. PI Bob Arthur says they don't know if Lee did make those calls because it's possible by that time he'd been taken out and someone else made the calls.
Yeah.
But who, lady? Tell us who.
Exactly. Lee's family thinks he was kidnapped by someone who wants to destroy his bank investigation records. They think this person is the one that made the phone calls. Lee's wife, Connie, says everything points to Lee being dead. She says her heart still tells her he's out there somewhere, but logic tells her he's not. Stack says Connie clings to the hope that someone saw her husband's plum-colored 1985 Lincoln Town Car between when he left the restaurant on May 4th, 1990, and the time the car was found ablaze the next day. She is also hoping someone might have information about his copper-faced Rolex watch, which has diamonds encircling the face and studding the band. So, that is the segment. So, just some extra stuff that was not on UM. Aside from his, like, jewelry business, which they offhandedly kind of mention, he also dealt in diamonds, antique guns, and watches.
Oh, wow.
He had, like, a full-on side hustle. People who knew Lee said they weren't aware of any personal problems going on. Connie and Lee, according to everyone that knew them, were on good terms. They would square dance together a few times a week.
Well, wow. Then you know it's good.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that is a pretty, like, If you hate each other, you're not square dancing a few times a week.
Or maybe you are. Because that sounds terrible.
I think it's cute. I think they loved each other.
I'm just kidding. I think they probably did.
Staff and patrons at Coco's restaurant, which is the restaurant he was seen at, can all verify he was there because he went there daily. So they knew him. It's not like, oh, I remembered a guy with white hair. Like, they were like, Lee was here.
Mm-hmm.
He was having lunch with two real estate agents at Coco's that day. One of them saw him leave the restaurant and walk towards his car. He said that he could not confirm that he saw him getting in it, but he did see him walking towards it alone.
Okay.
The other real estate agent said that, quote, Young was suspicious of a man seated across a narrow aisle at the restaurant's lunch counter. The agent said he was asking Young about a gold nugget a friend had found when the man at the counter began eyeing the agent and Young. The man left the restaurant without finishing his lunch about 6 minutes before Young, paying his bill with a credit card.
Okay.
A ranch hand in Oracle, which is 40 miles north of Tucson, saw Young's car going north between 7:30 and 8 p.m. that evening. And then here was the biggest one that I was like, why would UM not have mentioned this? A license plate from a car stolen in Pima County was on the rear end of Young's car when it was found.
Oh.
The correct plate was on the front end.
Okay.
The car that the stolen plate came off of was a 1984 Camaro and was involved in a chase near Deming, New Mexico, the night before Young disappeared.
Weird.
A 17-year-old man was driving the stolen car, but police would not say what they had learned from him. So I'm like, what the fuck? Why wouldn't they mention this? This is obviously like a huge thing. And then immediately the next article I find says that the license plate thing was a wild goose chase. Oh. The kid driving the car claimed to know absolutely nothing about what the police were asking him about, and the confusion was eventually solved when the sheriff's department realized they'd mistakenly provided the police with the plate number from a different stolen vehicle they were, like, recording.
Oh, God.
And they accidentally interchanged them. And this was in multiple news articles.
Oh, no.
This license plate was on his car, and it's this huge clue, and, like...
Oh, no.
Yeah, published all over. And it was not... Sucks. It was a mix-up. It was a mix-up at the police office.
Oh, God.
So the plate was never on Lee's car. So that's why it wasn't in UM. I was, like, so mad at them for not putting this in. From that same article, I learned that one of Lee Young's friends named Rich Mack, who was also a private eye, he and Lee were policemen together in Scottsdale. And once Lee was shot in the back in a gun battle in 1961.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he had a wild life.
Okay.
Yeah. He was just like, I've seen him get shot in the back and survive it. So I think he's going to survive this. And I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I also feel like your luck runs out eventually.
Eventually.
I guess so.
Sad.
And then one other sad thing I found was that Lee had been talking about moving to Arkansas where he could spend some time relaxing with Connie.
Aww.
And his friend Max said, you could not meet a nicer, finer guy.
Aww.
And that was like pretty much it.
Wow.
I do have a few things from the message boards. So Crystal Dawn had said, it is almost impossible to find anything on this case on the net. I did find his missing persons profile, so apparently he's never been found, which is true. He's on like Namus and Charlie Project and everything. This person, Mozart PC27, said, my first impression, though, is anyone sure this is a homicide? Could he have engineered his own disappearance? Sounds like the guy was into some shady dealings, to be honest, dealing jewelry out of the back of his car. That's not high on my list of legitimate businesses. And then the Cars 1986 said, while I can't be 100% sure Lee was murdered, I'd say the evidence points in that direction. If Lee was involved in some shady business on the side, no evidence to support that, it's just speculation, why would he abandon his wife? Don't you think he would have wanted to take her with him? Lee Young was involved in an investigation involving money laundering by drug dealers. I'd say there's a good chance they found out he was talking to the feds and killed him.
Yeah.
It was then set up to look like a robbery. And Meg the Egg chimed in just that geographically it makes sense. She said Phoenix and Tucson are known for serving as command posts for a number of national-level drug operations. And then the Cars 1986 again said the segment also makes mention that thousands of dollars of jewelry were found in the trunk of his car. The only missing items were his Rolex watch and his briefcase. That doesn't sound like a robbery, IMO. Maybe because someone was hired to kill Lee and... and that watch and the briefcase were ways to show that whoever killed him had got the right person.
That's what I think. I think the watch was proof and the briefcase was what they wanted from him. That's what I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I was like, the watch was on his body and his, we don't have his body either, but the briefcase.
Yeah.
That definitely seems like evidence of who, like, who was killed.
Well, and you know what about this too? Why not just leave his body in the car and burn it? Like, they made the extra step to take the body and dispose of it elsewhere. And I guess it was the right thing. No, not the right thing to do, but it worked for them because he hasn't been found. But just a weird extra step to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Like, we know that's his car.
Especially because it was so burned. The car was so burned. So it could have burned evidence on his body, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the car is 1986, again, said, I think the police have more information than they want to let out publicly because there is almost a bare minimum of information on this guy in the segment or online.
Yeah.
Either someone local did him harm or he was murdered by cartel members for his involvement with the money laundering. So that was a thing that had never occurred to me before when we complain about sometimes with these segments, we're like, why did they give us like barely anything? They have to know more than that. They're interviewing the family members. Mm-hmm. Why aren't they telling us more? Probably sometimes the police are saying you can't talk about this.
Well, and I mean, especially specifically for this case, because he was involved with the feds. Like he was working on something for the federal government. So there is not a lot that they can say at all.
Totally. Even if the family knows stuff, they cannot say anything. So that was like a big epiphany for me. I was like, oh, sometimes I'm like really mad about this and maybe there's a really good reason they're not telling us more.
They're not just being lazy or negligent.
Yeah. So, and that's all that is out there. He was just never found.
Jeez.
Everyone on the message boards thinks his wife is just like very genuine and likable. And
yeah, she was a honey.
I don't think he was involved in anything shady himself, I think.
Hmm. Yeah.
He was investigating something shady, and they killed him for it.
Sad. So, yikes.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Well, and it's like, yeah, so then could no one, with the briefcase that had all his files, so he didn't have, like, a partner also working on this investigation? Because it's like, that would be the lead, then, to go after the people he was investigating, right? Because they'd probably the ones who killed him, but then if he's the only one who has that information, or it's not like today where all those files would be saved on a computer somewhere.
Yeah. Like the fact that he was just carting them around with him about town is
because he probably, he thought they were safe if they were with him. Like he didn't want to leave them at his office or he didn't want to, you know, so he was probably like, if they're with me, they're safe. And it's like, well, not if someone kills you.
Not in that day and age.
Yeah. Oof. Wow. Yeah. Rough.
Imagine walking in front of a security camera and suddenly it comes to life asking you what you're doing on the property. Well, the future of home security is here with Deep Sentinel, the only home security system that delivers the experience of a personal guard on every customer's home. There's no false alarms, and it's the fastest police response times, period. Deep Sentinel sees and engages with any suspicious people on your property 24/7 and in real time. Not only is Deep Sentinel preventing break-ins, but with the holidays around the corner, Deep Sentinel prevents package thefts, car break-ins, and just gets shady people off your property. Big believer in stranger danger over here, so you know we love that. Don't get stuck with a traditional home alarm system. They're outdated and riddled with false alarms, causing massive issues for police departments. Check out deepsentinel.com and use the code VIRTUALGUARDS for 10% off. That's Deep Sentinel, DeepSentinel.com, and use the code VIRTUALGUARDS, VIRTUALGUARDS, for 10% off.
I can't wait to hear yours because I have not consumed anything very good lately.
Really?
I just don't have time lately. It's
really sad. Oh, honey.
I need some recommendations.
Well, I have a reco, but I already texted you about it. But I'm going to talk about it a little bit here because it's so good.
Great.
I found this podcast and it is called Fallen Angel, the Victoria's Secret Story.
Oh,
God.
And it is very good. It's, let's see, who does it? Oh, C13 Originals and Campside Media. So we've heard from other podcasts from Campside before. But it's just about the rise, the history and the rise and fall of Victoria's Secret. Its connection to the lovely Jeffrey Epstein.
Oof.
It interviews former angels, Victoria's Secret angels, oh. And you get to learn about what sort of hellish experience their lives were like while they
were old school angels.
One walked with when like Heidi Klum was walking, but then one was like 2009, 2010.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sort of like the hierarchy of what it means to be like at the Victoria's Secret fashion show versus like getting to be an angel.
Oh yes.
All of like body dysmorphia, obviously. Yeah.
Wasn't there something else about this?
I think one of the heads of Victoria's Secret recently was, of course, charged with, or of course, accused of sexual misconduct.
Mm.
And yeah, and then there's the Epstein connection. It is so good. I am so upset that it's not on Wondery because I cannot binge it. So it's like one episode a week. I don't know how people do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's making me crazy. But it's amazing, so you got to listen. So good.
Wow, okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's one of the best podcasts, new podcasts I've listened to in a while.
Wow. Carlin?
I feel like I forgot to mention it last time we recorded, but the second season of Love on the Spectrum.
Oh, my. I've never seen that.
You haven't?
I haven't either.
Oh, my. It is the nicest thing you've ever seen in your entire life. You have to watch it. I love it. And the nice thing about the second season is that they kind of pick up on some of the people from the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. It is just so nice. I can't even.
Oh, my gosh. I guess we have to watch it.
Carla's having an existential crisis because we cannot. She's like, wants to relate to us about it, and we don't know about
it.
You don't, and I can't. It's just, these people are such genuine souls that, like, it's just the most genuine feelings you've ever heard expressed because there's no, like, wall
filter
there of, like, what you're not really saying, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, like, watching them, like, go through these things and, like, maybe find love, and, like, it's just so nice. And it's just like a really, I feel like it's a nice way to like show you that people with different abilities are just people and they have the same fears you have and they're just maybe going to talk about it more than you are.
Right.
And
like, yeah.
It's just so good. And so
is it
good.
In Australia or is it in?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really good. And I forgot to talk about it last time.
Oh, well, it's not old because it's new to me. I'm just hearing about it now.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You have to watch it. And then this is more of just not a sharesy, but I just wanted to let Allison know that on Halloween, mm-hmm. I watched the original Halloween and Halloween 2.
Yay! Ooh, Halloween 2 is not good.
Honey! I was just looking at the Rotten Tomatoes. So the first one has like a 96. The second one has like a 31.
There is one where it completely zags and it becomes a completely different movie.
Yeah. I almost watched more of them, but I was like,
you're good.
Scrolling through. Apparently, the only other one that has good ratings is the one that was Halloween 20 Years Later that also has Jamie Lee.
Oh, I saw that in the theater.
And apparently that one's kind of good.
Oh, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really loved Halloween 5. It has a special place in my heart.
Yeah, there's a couple that have like higher ratings, but
how many are there?
There's
probably
so
like
many,
12
honey.
Or 15 at this point.
And there's a brand new one. One of my employees told me that he just goes, "It's a lot."
Yeah.
I was like, "Okay.
It is not being very well received."
Yeah. Okay, I have a question. What is the Halloween movies are the movies with Michael Myers, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he wears a white mask.
Yes.
And what is the premise?
So that
exactly. Do you want us to just give you the entire
I'm serious.
Well, here's the thing, because I just was not allowed to watch this kind of stuff. So I was like, I'm going to go back and like watch these
I
classics.
Love that for you.
But I just
That's
want people
awesome.
To tell me about it because I'm not
so,
watching.
So, okay.
It.
So in like first scene, there's a psychiatrist and a nurse. They're driving to a mental institution.
Oh my God, we're going scene by scene.
Somebody attacks the car. No, this is just the brief. Somebody attacks the car. And the person who attacks the car ends up taking the car and escaping from the mental institution.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Flashback, 20 years yes. prior.
Okay. 20 years prior.
Okay.
We have a little boy mm-hmm. that okay. kills his sister with a giant butcher knife.
Okay, I knew about a sister situation. Okay.
Yes. And right. then...
And you see it through his eye holes?
Yes.
His Halloween mask eye holes?
Yes. So so this person that escaped is Michael Myers.
Okay. And spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. He goes back to the house and Jamie Lee is, oh my gosh, beautiful, beautiful young Jamie Lee.
Gorgeous. The original final girl.
Is like in the neighborhood. He sees her. He starts following her. And this is why it's so good. Is the whole movie is just the anticipation of he's following her. Like, hardly any of it is slasher. It's so much of it is just him fucking following her, and it is so scary.
Yeah. Ew. So he just kind of stalks her.
He stalks her for a while. Yeah, and then he kills all her friends.
Yes. But then in part two, we find out why he's doing this.
And why? Just tell me why. Spoiler alert.
Okay, I'll tell you, but you can cut it.
Okay.
Okay, do you hear music playing? This is the creepiest shit I've ever heard in my life. What? Let's Get Physical is playing somewhere.
In your house?
In my ears. It was Apple Music turned on and started playing Let's Get Physical. In my ear.
It's the ghost of Michael Myers waking out.
Okay, and then my other question is who's Mike Myers?
Austin Powers?
Austin Powers.
Oh. Okay.
Wow, I can't imagine confusing those two people.
Why did they do that? Why did they call him Mike Myers? Oh, that's his real name. Is that his real actor name?
Is he born before 1978? Because the movie didn't come out until 1978.
He's probably like 60, yes. That's why. Okay. Neither one of them is named after the other.
Okay. Just, these are my questions that I had.
Anyway, I watched that. Oh, we also watched Scream 1 this Halloween week. Yeah. I've had a good, like, original horror movie run.
The original Nightmare on Elm Street's really good, too.
I almost watched that one. I probably will.
Baby Johnny Depp is in it. It's good.
Oh, yeah, girl.
Yeah, he's great. Fun.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's been fun.
That's awesome.
We should have a Patreon level where you guys just describe scary movies to me. And...
And you ask weird questions like, is Mike Myers Michael Myers?
I just show you what's been going on in my brain for the past 30 plus years as far as pop culture goes and the confusion that's happening.
Oh, my God.
I think I have a lot of, like, wrong information stored in my brain. Okay, my Sherzy is just that I have been... starting to listen to an old favorite, which is just the Moth podcast, which I used to listen to when it'd come on NPR, when I'd listen to the radio.
Moth Radio Hour?
I love the Moth. And now they have the Moth Radio Hour podcast. And so when I don't have time to like really dive into something that's I need to listen to closely or I just want something quick, it's nice to put it on and hear people tell stories.
Yeah.
And they're very good.
It's a classic.
It's a classic. So that's mine.
Awesome.
We have a review to read.
Read it.
I'll read it.
Okay.
The subject says, feels like a sit down with friends chatting about all things solved and unsolved. 5 stars. I've been listening to these ladies for years. Wow. Can't believe it's been that long. Same. They cover the cases so well that if you haven't seen the show, you can still follow along. I particularly love the updates, the amount of effort put into research, the most up-to-date information is what really sets this podcast with the best. If there is an answer to unsolved mysteries, the ladies will find it. They are easy to... I was about to make an Ice Ice Baby reference, but I decided not to.
Okay, thank you.
They are easy to listen to, and you feel like you're just... You've just sat around with your girlfriends talking about a shared interest. The laughter, the jokes, the insults to all those we think is a DB. Thanks so much for sharing this with us. I wish it would never end.
D.
Aw.
So nice.
Thank you.
Thank Very you. Nice. If you want to leave us a review, you can and you should. And we'll donate $1 to the Trevor Project this month. And we might also read it on an episode. Okay. So what are we covering next episode, which will be a two-parter again, episode 17.
Right. I go first, and I have a lost love segment about a man named John Elias and his family.
And then I've got a wanted segment about a real DB named James Wyatt.
And in part two, I have a legends, a cryptid, the one, the only, the Yeti.
Yeah! And then I wrap it up with an unexplained death about the Stanton Bones. All right, listeners, we love you so, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. Go to patreon.com/resolvedmysteriespodcast if you're interested in supporting us there. If you subscribe at the $5 a month level or higher, you're going to get ad-free episodes, 2 extra episodes a month, and other goodies in the mail. To see photos we reference in the episode, follow us on Instagram at resolvedmysteriespodcast and on Facebook and Twitter at resolvethepod. You can contact us at resolvedmysteriespodcast.com, resolvedmysteriespodcast@gmail.com, or at our P.O. Box, 14005, Portland, Oregon, 97293. Send us your stories for listener short stack episodes. If you want to email us your favorite unsolved mystery story or cold case or any nostalgia you have surrounding the show, send it our way because we love to hear from you. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you like us, leave a 5-star review and tell a friend or tell 2 or tell 3. Don't forget, for every review we receive, we donate $1 to a different nonprofit.
Okay. Wait, okay. Double check and make sure all your files for this episode are in the drive and add your photos and sources for your segments to the drive so you don't forget later, Carlin.
Wait! Exclamation point.
I did have it in red, but I was like, that's too much.